always a sin. Omnia quae ego facio son semper peccatum. All the things that I do are always a sin. That's Martin Luther. And that then is the second cardinal feature of Lutheran Protestantism, what we've come to call the total depravity of human nature. Human nature is so depraved, you couldn't be more depraved in theological language than to claim, as Luther did, that everything we do is always a sin. That's pretty depraved. And of course, the consequences of these positions, after almost 500 years, have been disastrous. Now the second, by the way, and read what you've got in your pages. I'd also recommend, if you get a copy of my book, The Religions of the World, Religions of the World, the book needs to be reprinted. All I need, again, is time. After God's grace, what I most need is time. But Religion of the World is about 16 long chapters. One of the chapters is on Protestantism. There's a very carefully worked out synthesis of Protestantism, both historically and doctrinally. The book was published in hardback, again sold, I don't know how many, 100,000 books, copies, were then reprinted in a 2-volume paperback, should be somewhat revised and republished. That chapter on Protestantism and the Religion of the World is the fruit of a lifetime of research into Protestantism and condenses all the important things that anyone should know, including, by the way, Protestants, about their own Protestantism. The second major branch of Protestantism is Calvinism. In the United States, it generally is in two forms, either as Presbyterianism or as one of the Reformed churches, so-called Reformed churches. But at root, it is Calvinism. We are not sure that Calvin and Luther ever physically met during their lifetimes. Calvin in France, Luther in Germany. All we do know is that Calvin, having been a seminarian, never ordained, was a genius. To really, really know the best in the sense of the deepest and the most devastating of Protestantism, there are the 2 volumes of John Calvin called The Institutes of the Christian Religion. Institutes of the Christian Religion. It is really a Summa Theologica of Protestantism. Because where Luther may be called the prophet of Protestantism, Calvin was the theologian. Calvin really thought through Protestantism His ideas are clear, and they are devastating. You couldn't be, you cannot be more contrary to Catholic Christianity than John Calvin. What John Calvin bought was two ancient heresies. He bought the heresy of Pelagianism, and he bought the heresy of Manichaeism. Which is a strange combination. Original Pelagianism, as you may know, claimed you don't need good works. All you need is your own will to be saved. I don't mean, now, in Manichaeism, you don't need your own will. All you need is God's grace. Calvin and his genius managed to combine those two that seem to be contrary, not to say contradictory, heresies. For John Calvin, building, you might say, on Luther's ideas, for John Calvin, in the last analysis, who will be saved? Those whom God has predestined for salvation. Will anybody else be saved? No. And therefore, basic to John Calvin is the absolute denial of man's free will. Now, ironically, Calvin writes for pages and pages in his Summa, the Institute of the Christian Religion, about the human will. John Calvin is the genius who created the modern world with its denial of human freedom. And there is one basic error in the modern world. This is it. And by now you find it. In every psychology book in the English-speaking world, every sociology book in the English-speaking world, you find it burnt into the minds of children from infancy. What shapes our lives, our heredity, our environment, and our education? And in this sense, Calvin improved on Pelagius. Pelagius is not really, despite his verbal claims, believe really and a true free will. Calvin claims that everything in this world is determined by forces outside of man. Take a man like William James. One of the, I would say, three most influential philosophers of the American mind. Volume after volume, all allegedly on the free will. There's no real freedom there. It's not I who determine what I want to do. I'm already shaped, I repeat, by my heredity, by my environment, and by my education. Does heredity shape one's character? Sure. Does environment shape one's character? Sure. Does education shape one's character? Sure does. What is that? Is that the ultimate reason? Watch this. Is that the ultimate reason why we should ever choose anything? No. The only problem is, and I say this, through almost 50 years of priestly experience, I'm afraid most Americans seldom use their own free will. Their lives are shaped, and they want to have it shaped. And beyond that shaping are those who have, well, shaped the modern mind. Going back, and John Calvin is the genius. John Calvin because of his opposition to any true human freedom was a sworn enemy of the Catholic Church. They had been studying for the priesthood. And among his hatreds, there was none worse than the sacrifice of the Mass. And I think in your pages that I gave you, there is a picture Yes, page 443. The martyrs of Gorkum. In 1572, the Calvinists seized 17 priests and 2 lay brothers in Gorkum, threw them into prison, cruelly mutilated them, and finally hanged them for refusing to deny their belief in the real presence and the papal primacy. And in that order, they are known as the Martyrs of Gorkum, were canonized in 1865. The Society of Jesus has martyrs, priests murdered while offering Mass for claiming that the Mass obtains grace. How idolatrous can you be? Obtains grace. And that your life is not, as they claim, absolutely predestined. It is, however, my clock says 3:51. Are there any questions? There must be more than 2 questions. Here, you can pass it around again. Father, will the Catholic Church be going underground as we hear said? Well, this may surprise you. The Catholic Church, in some ways, is already living underground. Without identifying either the priest or the diocese, the priest was called in by his bishop some 30 miles from his parish, ordained just about a year, and told by the bishop, leave his car in the parking lot, leave all his clothes, home of the rectory, here's your one-way plane ticket to a monastery far away from the diocese. What did I do? No crime. He was just, as the expression goes, too traditional. By the way, call me up. The priest did from his monastery. Pray. Thanks for being here. When I tell people, here's the recommendations I give to people. Number one, keep the faith. Number two, keep cool. Number three, keep quiet. Number four, do something. Is it proper to say, in such simple terms, that the Church's mission in the world is to call the people to the perfection of love and truth, and to teach what that demands of us, even if we do not like the burden it puts on us? Oh, sure, that's good. But I can tell you this, the more you do what, okay, you don't like. But the more you love, the more you love our Lord, the less you're going to complain about the burden. Then you wake up one morning, and to your surprise, where have I been all these years? I've been living in a dream. That's what following Christ is all about. Lord, thanks for waking me up. And it's a wonderful experience. And you really begin to not just, all right, take it. No. You love it. Not because you love the burden or the cross. Because the love, you love the one who you know on faith is behind the burden and the cross. Did I see another contribution? What is a good book in apologetics for beginners? Well, I think William Most's book, I'm just trying to think of the name. Who remembers the name? Father William Most's book. It may be simply apologetics, published recently. William Most, M-O-S-T. And what Father Most does is give you the rational grounds for believing. And remember, there are two fundamental grounds for believing. One is the mind being able to prove, the mind being able to prove that there is a God. And then the mind being able to prove that that God works miracles. Then you've got it made. And God will work miracles. I told you, was today's homily? Expect miracles. And you won't be disappointed. My friend is Catholic, but she goes to these Protestant healing services because she wants to feel better. But they don't make her any better. She never is peaceful. She says, your class is too hard. What to do? Tell your friend, hard, and use your head when you say this. But I'd be willing to have a more simple and easier class. In other words, I can either simplify the class that I'm giving here, or I can't come down with my vocabulary. Or I can at least have, for example, a class showing pictures instead of using big words. Tell her I'll pray for her if she comes to class. Tell her I'll say a prayer for her. Well, tell you what, I'll say one rosary for her. Now, remember, an unusual person. I'll say one rosary for her each time she comes to class. Okay? Is Father Gobi getting authentic messages, or has he gone astray? I met Father Gobi about 10 years ago, and I must have mentioned him to you on some previous occasion. When I questioned him, he told me, my broken Italian, in almost no English, talking about an hour and a half, maybe almost 2 hours. He told me, very high compliment, the questions you're asking me are those the Holy Father has been asking me too. How do you know your revelations are from God? He said, I don't know. Well, they shouldn't tell people that they are from God, right? In any case, I think Father Gobi, I don't want to use the word has gone astray, but I think Father Gobi's fertile, pious imagination sometimes carries him away. One of my jobs for the church is meeting mystics, sometimes appointed by the church, to pass judgment on the authenticity of mystics. Had one in Chicago last Friday. And find out, are they genuine? Pray for Father Gobi. What do you think of the new stewards for tomorrow? Endowment Drive now being conducted in the Detroit Archdiocese, stewards for tomorrow. Unless I'm mistaken, is this to raise money? I think it's a very attractive title. I compliment those who worked up the title, stewards for tomorrow. Well, I don't have the money to contribute, so I don't think it pertains to me. But I pray, of course, for the Archdiocese of Detroit. Do you have suggestions for program sources for a youth group to keep young people interested in faith after confirmation? Well, you may be surprised, but my Jesuit general has told me, ordered me to do something. For 30 years, what was called the Eucharistic Crusade was phased out of existence. It is exactly that, a program for the youth to keep them in the faith and strengthen their faith from the ages of 6 to 18. So since I was told by my superiors to do something, and the organization had to be, well, started by the bishops. So what I did was to find a benevolent bishop who canvassed his fellow bishops. We now have 40 dioceses. Isn't that nice? 40 dioceses signed up. All we need now is working hands. So, we'll do something about this program sources for youth group. If the one who signed this would give me their name, I'd appreciate it. While I'm on this, by the way, I want to ask all of you, as I have to some of you already, any contribution you can make, we are still open and in need. Any ideas on how you teach children, either teach them religion or teach them about the faith or the Sacred Heart in any shape or form, the practice of religion, I would appreciate getting something from you. Can I make an announcement on this before to you people? Oh gosh, it's about time I made the announcement. Of course, it's already 3 months since we last met. Would you please? And then I'm leaving the States on Sunday this week. And I'd appreciate your faxing. I mean it. My fax number at the university is area 313-993-1653. 313-993-1653. Any idea you may have, either what you have done, or your wife, or somebody you know, and as long as it is readable, fax it and I'll use it. Okay? Please. Thank you. There was a church in our area that has a Eucharistic room separate from the church, but it has many windows for all to view Jesus exposed in the monstrance. There is no reference shown to Jesus. My genuflect should be brought to the pastor's attention to put curtains on the windows so Jesus will not be exposed to all, since reverence is not enforced. Well, by all means, mention this to the pastor. You don't know how far you'll get. Certainly, if anybody should be respected and reverenced, it's our Lord. Remember the crowd that followed Jesus and the extreme reverence. And remember the man who said, I'm not even worthy to have you come under my roof. Remember? And this also is part of the crisis in the Catholic Church, the loss in so many places of the most basic respect for Jesus Christ really present in the Holy Eucharist. And of course, when just about everybody can handle the Blessed Sacrament, is it any wonder that this has an overflow into such things as this? By all means, talk to the pastor. I'll see a prayer that you get somewhere. Should miracles be added to the four marks of the true church? Well, let's see. Does anybody happen to have a copy of the Pocket Cafe Dictionary here? Well, don't bother. The miracles, that is already included in the four marks. One, holy, Catholic and apostolic, and it is usually included under the word holy. Miracles are one of the signs of the church's holiness. However, St. Robert Bellarmine, who wrote in the 16th and 17th centuries, St. Robert Bellarmine does include miracles as one of the 15 marks of the true church. So, yes. In other words, a more fully developed marks of the true church would include miracles. You told us our minds must be completely certain that God exists. Will you briefly describe the classic proofs for the existence of God? Well, they are best described in St. Thomas Aquinas, and they are present, I have them, in my Treasury of Catholic Wisdom, in the section which includes quite detailed selections from St. Thomas Aquinas. I could talk, of course, for hours in analyzing the five classic proofs for the existence of God. But we can say very simply that everything that we know in the world has a cause. But there must be some one cause that is behind everything which itself was caused. And that one cause behind all the other causes cannot himself have been caused. Otherwise, from nothing comes what? Nothing. Or another way that I put it, to condense it. Can there have been a time when nothing, and I mean this literally, nothing existed? Can there have been a time when nothing existed? No, because if there was, quote, a time, unquote, where nothing existed, what would exist now? Nothing. And wonder of wonders, to think that human beings, each one of whom had a beginning. Sometimes I tell people to call up their mother and ask them, "Mother, where was I before I was born?" "Jim, stop cracking jokes over the telephone." In other words, there cannot have been nothing, otherwise there would now be nothing. The one being that cannot not have existed from eternity, what a name you give him, we call him God.